I'm sorry.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation Economic Development. It is Wednesday, June 4th, 2003. At this time, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 5057, the Oregon Department of Transportation Fee Bill. Susan?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have at your place the fiscal impact statement for House Bill 5057. This is the fee bill for the Department of Transportation. These are fees that the legislature directed the agency to all of them, except for the outdoor advertising fee, maybe. In the last legislative session, to establish a fee to meet the Attorney General's opinion that these services could not be funded from the highway fund. There are five fees: utility permit fees, which are fees that allow utility companies to work in the right-of-way or to do construction. They charge a fee at the department to review their plans for that kind of construction or repair work. The RV show license fee was a fee that was established at the request of dealers for new dealers to new recreational vehicle shows to charge a fee so that they know where they are having these shows. Financial responsibility fee, this is administrative costs associated with accepting deposits in lieu of insurance. And the outdoor advertising fee, these are fees that are charged for sign permits, relocation of signs, outdoor advertising, business licenses, that sort of thing. And the international fuel tax agreement fees for trucking companies that participate in the international fuel tax program. And the revenues are noted on the fiscal impact statement. And what I'm asking the committee to do today is to approve these and ratify these fees and hold the bill in committee. There are some fees that the that are associated with the transportation package that the department and the sponsors of the bill have determined this would be the best vehicle for those fees to be attached to. So we will hold the bill over until that gets resolved. But if you can approve these fees today, then we can move on with the budget.
Susan, do we have someone from ODOT that can come up and talk about the utility permit fee? We asked questions about that before.
You bet.
Chair George, members of the committee, good morning. Doug Tindall, State Maintenance Engineer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The utility permit fee results from the Attorney General's opinion that we could not use highway funds for anything to do with utilities being in the right-of-way. This is not leasing land. It's just a method to recover our costs of processing the permit, reviewing any traffic control plans or any construction plans that the utilities have, and that's what it's designed to do. It's higher for the relocations when a construction project is going on and the utility needs to be relocated because that work is more substantial than when a utility comes and wants to put a pole in or something like that.
Do you remember my question about the issue of where we being ODOT, require a utility to make a move and then we charge them a fee to do that? What has happened as far as coming up with some sort of balance on that?
Chair George, there, the Attorney General's opinion that we got said we simply didn't have any choice. We could not use highway funds even if we required them to move. There is a court action against ODOT around that very issue, and so the question will be called to court as to whether or not the Attorney General was appropriately applying the constitutional restriction.
But that was a clear enough a rendering of decision that you that said you could not, where I require you, the utility, to do it, could not waive the fee. It actually required if you didn't get the fee.
That's correct, because the utility is there by our permit,
right,
and not not as a
they don't
property
own the
right. Right.
Right. Senator Morris?
That was exactly what I said.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Deeks?
Could we
know what the fees were. I mean, we get what we're changing them to, and I don't know how big an increase it is.
Maybe run down the list and just add them in there?
That would be great.
Okay.
I can make a copy, have a copy made of this. This sort of gives the what the old fee was and what the new fee is.
Would everyone like a copy of that?
Is that
different from this?
Only that it doesn't line up. Sorry.
Okay, so they don't have it detailed. Do you have the detail of that? This is what I had. Excuse me.
But if you were to take 50-57, can you line up where what the fees were before the increase?
Chair George, I can for the mic is giving something. I can for the utility permit fees. I'm not familiar with the other fees, but there were no utility permit fees in the last biennium because we just instituted them in the interim after we got the Attorney General's opinion. So that's why you're seeing no old fee on the front page there, old fee, and the new fee then ranging depending on the amount of work that's done.
Okay.
So in House Bill 5057 on page 1, that whole list of fees regarding utility permits are all new. There was none before.
George. Representative Smith.
Can you take us through the math of how you came up with the fees? I guess I won't spend the necessary time to figure out the math behind each of them.
Okay. Chair George, Representative Smith, the first set, utility permit fees not related to highway construction, those are based on the type of facility and the type of installation that's being made. The utilities have suggested that and what we found is this: we recover in total about the right amount of money. In each class, we're off a little bit, some low and some high. But basically, the fees varied depending on what we thought the amount of work we were going to have to put into the issuing the permit was. So for a class one, for instance, is on a road that's not real significant and an installation that is very, like putting in a pole on a low volume highway or even a medium volume highway would give you that low fee because we don't have to review very much. Conversely, the class four fee is a more extensive review, possibly running a gas pipeline along a major highway where there's a lot of work that we have to do in terms of reviewing traffic control plans and construction details.
Follow-up. So let's take a class one, simple.
Okay.
Tell me what the process is. I want to put a pole on my property.
Chair George, Representative Smith, you would come in to one of our district offices and fill out a permit form. We could be over recovering in the very simplest of case where there's no impact to traffic at all. There's no danger to the road structure. We basically look at it, approve it. We have some filing that goes on. At the very minimal amount of time, it maybe takes somebody an hour to just process that permit. But a Class 1 permit, if you're putting in a pole, you could be doing it in a way that's going to require some traffic control, some short-term traffic control. You could be putting it in a location that has some impact where we have to think about where's our drainage, where's the roadway structure, and so we have to do a little bit more analysis, so it could be a little bit higher than $150, too.
So what, help me here, what bumps a permit from a Class 1 to a Class 2?
Chair George, Representative Smith, a couple of things can do that. If you're the more important or higher volume the facility, we would spend more time thinking about how to do the traffic control or how to protect the system. That's primarily the change there between those two.
Thank you.
Within that, relative to that, do we have a mechanism to recover the actual costs that are incurred relative to providing you know, that supervision or traffic management or anything like that relative to a major project?
Chair George, in a, the utility company on a major project, we would approve what they're planning to do, and they would hire the traffic, they would supply the traffic control to do it.
In the past, we've had problems where we've gone in with major excavation, come back to a backfill, not properly compacted, have a settling, and then vehicles, you know, are mowing the crews or something like that, or fighting that. How are we doing right now to make sure that these things are not, they're not leaving us with a problem?
Chair George, not too bad. Part of the costs may be, in the, particularly in the higher cost permits, may be to inspect what was done to make sure that it meets our spec. We have specifications about the compaction and how you go about doing that. It is not a major problem on state highways. Utilities are generally do a pretty good job. In some cases, if they're going to do a pavement cut, we'll require a full width overlay if it's an extensive cut. And the utilities are doing a good job, in my opinion.
Good. Good to hear that.
I'm still curious. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that's what's on my phone over here. It is. Never mind. I'm still curious, but I got the answer.
Yes, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for the committee's comfort, you could lay out kind of an abbreviated form of how you arrive at the fees, what process you I'm assuming that you like checked against surveyed how long these jobs actually took to what was the process that you used to determine that these were the appropriate.
Chair George, Representative Hanson, because of the necessity to move quickly, we estimated the amounts of time for each of these permits and what we thought the variables were. The utility industry has suggested that there may be a better way to do it, and in fact there may be. We're waiting for the result of the court action that I referred to before we go to the work of refining the fees. There's some discomfort in the utility industry, but it's not great, mostly because we're not recovering more than what our costs are, which was our commitment and is, in fact, in law. In total, we're not recovering more than our costs are. We're recovering very close to what our costs are.
Question. Senator Carter.
Doug, did you guys, in looking at the new fees versus the old fees, was there a time management study done, or what kind of assessment did you do in terms of the cost of doing business in terms of the old fees versus new fees, because the variation is so great?
Chair George, Senator Carter, again, on the utility fee side, we did an estimate. We did not do a formal time study to set those fees. And I would look to Mike to speak to the other fees. Ours are all new. They didn't.
I'm sorry. I was looking at the outdoor. Under the outdoor advertising fees.
And I don't believe that there was a time study done on those. But I would look to Mike to help me answer that question.
I'm just looking for justification in terms of it being such a big gap.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carter, Mike Kamars. We did look at the amount of time involved in processing, but there also was the issue of the magnitude of whatever the issue was, and such as size of the sign and the kind of issues that a sign caused in terms of safety on the highway. So it was trying to make sure that we had a balance of both time involved as well as what kind of issues were involved in trying to have an incentive or disincentive for size of sign on the highway. Except for in the case of business license fees, that's where it is for a business who is in the business of erecting these signs, and so that was a matter of processing the fees.
Were state employees involved in the erecting of these signs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, no, not involved in erecting them. The businesses are involved in erecting the signs. So some of the fees where it's a sign specifically for a permit to put out one sign, that's where you have annual permit fee. The business license fee is for a business that's in the business of putting out the signs, and it's trying to make sure that we're responsive to the direction to say that we have to manage the highway and ensure we don't have too many large signs on the highway, as well as looking at the kinds of businesses that are in this this type of work and make sure that we have a fee that structures around how much they do.
Thank you.
So the commission had a long deliberation and collaboration on this?
It was discussion in response to the Attorney General's opinion. There was some discussion within ODOT, and then minimal discussion with the commission itself.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith and Representative Duke.
Actually, I'll go over to Representative Krieger for now.
Oh, Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, when we had the original hearings, I had some concern about the magnitude of the increases that I wasn't comfortable. I couldn't see that the department had really shown that they incurred that much of an cost increase to justify some of this. But there was some question at the time about signs within cities, whether that was regulated different. The cities had the authority to do that, but whether a fee was paid to you if it was along a highway. Can you clarify that?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't recall that question, but I can certainly quickly get an answer to it. The question is, within cities, if there's a difference in regulation between outside of cities.
Yeah. Who has the authority to say you can have a sign, and who pays the fee? Would you get a fee in the city the same as you do outside of a city along a major highway like 101 going in and out of Brookings, for instance?
You don't listen to that. You want to respond?
Chair George, Representative Krieger, the law that's deals with this deals with signs visible from state highways. What I don't know is what the process is with the city if there's a sort of a dual permitting process. I'm not sure about that, but I do know that our regulations deal with signs visible from state highways regardless of where they are.
Senator Dukes?
I was just kind of curious as to, I mean, I know that the Beautification Act requires that we not have too many inches spacing and all that kind of stuff, but you pretty much got that down now. I mean, people know where they can plant signs and where they can't. And the first time they come in for a permit fee, you work out all of that with them. So I'm kind of curious as to what kind of maintenance you do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, when you say maintenance...
Well, there are ongoing fees. I mean, there's the initial one, and that one makes sense to me because you're going to talk to them about where they're going to put it, and there must be something else you talk to them about besides that, the size or whatever.
Size,
but all of them are pretty much permanent now, so they don't make them bigger or smaller. But anyway, so you have those kinds of discussions with them. You're going to engage staff, and you're going to tell them what the requirements are and all of that. But then there's annual fees and all of that, and what do they get for that?
Go ahead.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, the annual fees are required by law that they have to repermit those signs every year.
Okay. But is there there's not a dollar amount, I'm assuming, in the law?
I don't believe there's a dollar amount in statute.
Okay. And what do you do on a regular basis with those signs?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, we don't actually touch the sign. What we do is keep a database. We used to issue a decal for every sign every year, and there was legislation in this session that took away that requirement, which will actually save us some money in terms of mailing out the decals. But it is not, it's the function of keeping track of what signs that are out there is our ongoing responsibility. Keeping track of the signs that are out there and ensuring that there are not illegal signs out there is our ongoing responsibility. We don't actually do anything to the sign.
So are the people who have the licensed signs paying for making sure there are, I mean, you've got maintenance crews out there. My guess would be that they would notice if a sign went up that shouldn't be there. And actually, I know they do because they take them down and then I get to hear about them.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, the maintenance responsibility is generally right-of-way fence to right-of-way fence. We might, this function is actually performed out of the right-of-way section in Salem. We may remove a sign off of, the highway maintenance will remove illegal signs off of highway right-of-way. There's a more substantial process to remove a sign that's visible from a state highway but not on highway right-of-way.
I guess I wouldn't make any more of a big deal out of it, Mr. Chair. I'm just noticing that some of these fees are getting up there now, and I don't know that they get anything for it after the first one. I would tend to make the first one fairly substantial, because that's when all the planning and the work goes into it, and make the annual ones less, because it doesn't sound like we're doing a lot. And maybe it's reasonable to make the folks who are legal pay for the ones who aren't. I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I clarify that the annual permit fee renewal is significantly less and is there just to cover the cost of a brief inspection to make sure the size of the sign is the size dictated and that things have not changed in terms of what the situation is. So that the idea is to have a significantly less annual permit fee renewal.
Mr. Chair, what could have changed? These are big suckers. These things don't go anywhere. They don't get bigger. They don't get smaller. They just are. So the advertising on them changes. So if you want to tell me you're out there making sure they're not obscene, then I'll say, okay, they've got a person who does that, and they got to pay them.
That's
and that
it.
Makes sense.
No obscenity on the road.
But short of that, and then there's that little business license fee.
Mm-hmm.
Just comments.
I mean, 25 to 500.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
would you like to ask a question about that?
Well, why are those jumping up so much, I guess, with the business license fee, and what do they get for those?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, the reason why most of these fees are moving is the rate that it was established before was not at all covering costs. And with the Attorney General's direction that says you must go through and determine what costs are and to make sure that you're covering your costs, that was the effort here to make sure that it's actually covering those costs. So when you have a business license fee moving from the 25 to 500, that's for a business that erects signs and covering the costs of what is done at ODOT for that review. For the annual permit fee, it's very small. As you can see, the $70 is the new amount. It is up significantly from where it was. It was, in essence, an immaterial fee of $10 before. But just to process that and to do inspections on any kind of basis, even biennially, is going to be a $70 fee. So that's what we're trying to do, is keep it low on the renewal side, but to make sure that there's enough to cover the cost.
Senator Morris.
Could we move to a different section of the fees if we're done with this one? Thank you. Susie, could you help us find in the revenue section in the large notebook here where these utility fees roll up?
You can, for utility fees, you can look under the utility tab and see there's a section behind all of the written material that has the revenues and expenditure page on it.
Look, maybe you could answer my question. What is the total amount collected by these utility fees anticipated?
The amount on the fiscal impact is
$4,784,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
For the utility fees.
For the utility fees, yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I should have seen that.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Right now I'm extraordinarily uncomfortable with House Bill 5057. I have complete respect and admiration for the department, but I'm uncomfortable. One of the questions I have is, has the department done any type of analysis on the economic impact to the businesses that are going to pay these fees? Let's take the outdoor advertising fee. I'd be very interested in knowing what the average annual revenue is for the average outdoor advertising sign and what raising that fee from $125 to $600 would be. For this committee's edification, in a previous job, I had the opportunity to actually work with the company citing some of these. And the annual revenue they derive off these signs is not tremendous. And a $600 the potential fee of $600 is going to significantly impact their bottom line. And that just makes me very uncomfortable.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I'd be happy to get information that we can find on the average annual revenue of such companies. I can't guarantee what might be available out there, but we'll try to track it down.
I think follow up, Chair George. I think it's very important for this committee to know how that fee does impact a business. Raising a fee from $125 to $600 is going to have an impact, especially for companies that manage hundreds and hundreds of signs, which is typically the case. And to ask a company that potentially has 1,000 signs to now have to pick up an additional $475 per sign, if they're, I guess it's less than that if they're re-permitting, but it's a tremendous expense to a very particular segment of Oregon's business. So I do feel uncomfortable right now.
Mr. Chair and Senator Smith, I just want to make sure we're tracking on the business license fees would be, in your example of a business that might have around 500 signs, that'd be up to $1,000 for the business, regardless of how many signs they have. And so that would be
It's not per sign.
Correct.
It's a business license fee.
It's a fee for all the signs that they have for the business.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Certainly.
Thank you very much. Sometimes, the light just takes a little longer to click on.
Thank you.
So the business license fee then is for... Okay. Thank you. I may have a further question. Let me think through this a little further. Thank you.
Does the business license demand your signs up to $499 or depending on the number? Yeah, because the first time I saw that, I thought the same thing. Oh, my gosh, for a sign. But when you look at the total revenue that it's going to generate, you recognize that can't be right because it doesn't come out with a total number of signs and the amount of dollars.
Right.
Right.
Thank you.
Representative Hanson,
I'm trying to put this in perspective. We have requirements that the federal government requires us to do in terms of sign monitoring and usage. These fees, basically, there's no justification in terms of the percentage increase based on inflation but in terms of cost recovery, it seems to me that with the Attorney General's decision, you can't subsidize this. So if this is the true cost of doing the work, and the work is pretty much required to be done, and it's also needs, in terms of the new sign permit fees, that gives access to companies to be able to add new signs and either increase their advertising if they're privately owned or if it's a company. It seems to me this is pretty much something we have to do. We might be able to worry over very specific charges and stuff, but we've either got to recover the costs of it or stop doing it. And I don't think that's a real good option.
Okay. Let me ask a question first. We talked about this earlier right here that you're listening to right now, and that is the foreign vehicle under the IFTA. Is that going to be per operator? Because right now we go in to buy the fuel, we pay this federal tax, we pay the state tax on the diesel that we're running in on-highway vehicles. Did Greg up there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Greg Delpani, Motor Carrier Transportation Division Administrator. Your question was regarding the IFTA fee, mm-hmm. and the fee is not per vehicle, it's per account. So the farmer is paying the fee one time.
Based on the number of vehicles?
Actually, the farmer is... farmers have farmers have a negotiated reduced fee that I believe is $50,
mm-hmm.
although I don't see it represent. Oh, here it is. Farm vehicles, $50, irregardless of the number of vehicles.
Okay.
For farms alone.
The fee structure is staggered based on fleet size for the commercial motor carrier industry.
Mm-hmm.
Then based on testimony that was received at three public hearings we conducted around the state as we attempted to build this fee structure, we provided for a reduced fee for farmers that is $50.
Greg, I'm trying to understand how I would cost you any money, and I'm speaking for me now, is the fact when I run into a pump and I pick up this fuel, I'm paying the federal tax and I'm paying the state tax. Where's the cost to the Department of Transportation?
Mr. Chairman, to the extent that farmers are discharging fuel tax obligations to other states, perhaps farms that are either significant in size and they operate on an interstate basis, or they're perhaps on the borders, boundaries of the state, and they have occasion to operate in other states, and there is a fuel tax liability that they owe not to Oregon, but to another state, and they use the IFTA program to discharge that expense, they're simply paying then their negotiated cost, our administrative cost in providing that service. The notion behind IFTA is that all motor carriers and all farmers that are based in Oregon but who have interstate operations and therefore fuel tax obligations in other states derive a benefit by paying their entire external fuel liability, regardless of to whom it's owed, and dealing singly with the state of Oregon, paying it to Oregon, and then we disperse the dollars appropriately for them. The administrative cost of that program is deemed ineligible use of highway fund, and so we had to calculate the true cost of providing the service and then establish a fee schedule that would amortize that entire cost.
So this, if I understand this right, not every farmer is going to pay that fee. It's going to be only those ones that are operating out of state?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Only those that have occasion to participate will pay that fee. Not
right.
All farmers will pay
okay.
that fee.
Yeah, because I think in the past we've had to buy a permit or something, like I've run to California before, and I know you had to buy a permit.
Mr. Chairman, you have an option of discharging a fuel tax to another jurisdiction by purchasing a temporary permit, mm-hmm. a temporary fuel tax permit.
Right.
But if your operations are such that you're going to have repeated entry, it makes sense to have a permanent credential.
Okay. Just wanted to get clarification on that. Because I knew we would hear on that one.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Carter, and then we'll come back to Representative Smith and Representative Krieger.
Okay. When I look at the fee schedule, are these dollars, do the dollars that you get from the signs and this kind of stuff go into the general fund or into other funds?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carter, the fees will come in and be separately tracked because it's from a separate source. Will not go into the general fund nor into the highway fund. It's a separate fund. And the Attorney General requires us to track those separately to make sure that we aren't using highway fund money for these functions that are not allowed for highway fund purposes.
So where would I find these on your budget in terms of dollars, general lottery, other federal? Is that non-limited?
It's within the other fund category, and we have revenue sources. It's in miscellaneous because each one of these is quite small compared to other revenue sources, but we can show you more detail if you'd like in terms of what's received.
I'd just like to know what was the this last biennium, what was the total amount of, what did you say, non-limited? Or what category?
Other funds, and some of these are, all these are quite small when you look at the $150 under the IFTA amount, or many of the others, there was not a fee in the current period. But if you would like to know the amounts that existed in the current period, I can give you those estimates.
What's the bottom line amount? I mean, what was the total amount that the department received this biennium, 0103 biennium, the total amount received by the department this last biennium?
I can track that and have that to you in a few minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Smith?
Thank you. I'm still struggling with the math on the outdoor advertising fee. If you take it, in Morrow County, we have signs off of I-84, and the monthly fee that's charged to the Port of Morrow runs about $400 per month. I know that's very low, but we're in Eastern Oregon. If you take that to $1,000 per month times 500 signs and let's use 500 as the average, that's $500,000 gross to the business. Then you step back and you go to the annual renewal permit fee, and I guess this is where I need clarification. A fee increase, is that per sign from $20 to $90?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is a per sign annual permit fee for renewal on signs.
Okay, so then you take that that $90 and multiply that times the 500 signs, that works out to $45,000. Then because they now own 500, they're also paying an additional $1,400 in the business license fee. You take that 46,400 divided by, or 46,400 divided by 500,000, they're darn near 9% fee just to be in this business.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, you're talking about the business license fee plus the individual permit fees and what the impact would be between the two for the business.
On a business, yeah, you know, and again, it's based on the math we just walked through of $1,000 a month per sign, and I think that's very high because I know in Morrow County it's $400.
Now to make sure we're tracking, the only $1,000 fee is the total fee for
business. No. I'm saying if the business is charging a client $1,000 a month to have a sign up, times 500 signs, that's $50,000 gross to the business, minus design, artwork, printing, mm-hmm. placement, et cetera. That's $500,000. You then take that same $500 times the fee of $90, that's $45,000, plus the additional $1,500, you're now at $46,500 just in government fees. You divide $46,500 into $500,000, and I don't have my calculator, but that works out to about a 9%. And so in order for a business to be in this business, they get to pay the state of Oregon 9% of their gross. Show me where I'm wrong.
Chair George,
Representative.
So I make sure I understand this. Where? You said 1,000 a month, right?
On a basic assumption. A basic assumption of business, I want to go lease to Senator Morris. I'm going to say it's going to cost you $1,000 a month to be on a 401 square foot or larger sign.
I understand. And it's $90 a year for the charge. So your percentage is you're comparing a monthly revenue percentage with an annual charge.
That's him, 12,000. They're paying 90.
Oh, well, let me ask this question, Greg. I think this is it. You give us an example, a numerical example of how much it would cost for a business to do business between the state of Oregon and another business that is representing it. Does that get it, Greg?
No, that's exactly right, and I didn't follow my math through, and you're exactly correct. I want to know the impact this is going to have on small business in Oregon.
Chair George, Representative Smith, the questions that I heard you ask earlier that I wrote down that we'll get back to you on is if we can find out the average revenue for an outdoor advertising sign and the average cost to erect an outdoor advertising sign.
I just want to know
sign.
The average fee a business is going to have to pay.
Oh, okay.
The average percent. Of a business. I mean, if this is going to be 5% of their bottom line, I want to know that.
Yeah. Okay.
Representative Krieger.
Here, I think about my drive from here to Portland, how many thousand signs I see. Now, which signs are going to have to pay fees? Just because they're visible from I-5, they got to pay a fee regardless of the distance? There's tens of thousands of them. So how do you keep track of that?
No,
which ones pay a fee?
Chair George, Representative Krieger, there's an allowance for what's called an on-premise sign. So a sign that exists on the premise of a business is not charged the fee. These are for other signs that are what are called off-premise signs, advertising something not on the property. So a lot of the signs that you see are business identification or business signs, and so those are out there and allowed by law. To be there.
Most of these are going to be, Mr. Chair and Representative Krieger, are going to be billboards on the freeways, on major highways, and not within cities.
You guys got me started this morning. I wouldn't be so full of questions if Joan hadn't started all this. Mr. Chairman, question.
It was Joan that did this?
You and Joan. Your partners in crime together.
Senator Carter is now recognized.
Can you tell me if, as an owner of a piece of property going up I-5, back to Representative Krieger's question, I own the property, I want to sign up, I have to pay you to put a sign up on my property?
Chair George, Senator Carter, not if it's on your property. For instance, at an interchange, if there's a gas station at the interchange, putting up the gas station signing is not a permitted activity, or it's not an activity we issue a permit for, it's allowed by law.
if she's advertising my gas station on her, that's a different it's on her property, you bet you're going to
come
after
her. That's correct.
Actually,
that's
you're going to tell her she can't do it because there's probably too many signs out there already.
Could be. And sorry to disappoint you.
And if you let her do it, you're going to charge her.
Susie has a number, then I have a question, then we go to Senator Morris.
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, using Representative Smith's example of 50 signs, a business would probably net $600,000 a year. Their charge for the sign would be $4,500. That's $500 a month. That's 0.1% of their cost or their revenue.
I came up with 1%.
Okay. Well, another thing to get this into perspective, I just leaned over and I said to Susie, we have a total revenue that's coming from outdoor advertising signs of $338, and that's for biennium. How many signs do we have out there that we're regulating? You guys, that seems like you've given us that figure before. Is that here?
I don't have that one.
I don't have that, but we can.
Let's
get that.
Because my assumption, if I remember the number, that would be a very low number average.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, for per year. Yes, Senator.
Do not forget, they have a list in the office. Because that's why they charge you, so they can have a list.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Jesus. Senator Morris, on a more serious note.
Well, I'm not sure that you're a really serious question. And my question, Mr. Chairman, is why are we doing this?
That's what I want.
I mean, if it's a cost recovery,
right,
and these signs don't wander around a lot,
not often.
Right.
And there's nothing. Of any great benefit financially, why are we
apply it to federal law?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a federal law.
Yes.
It was a silly question.
Yeah.
Well, and we've been down this road before, and Representative Hansen, I think, articulated it right on the money as to why we collect this. Are you okay?
I'm not okay.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Maybe this will alleviate my concern. Were the companies that are going to be impacted by these fees notified through a public notice process?
Chair George, Representative Smith, I probably should have said this earlier. These fees are in place today. This is a ratification of fees that have been established by rule, and the fact that the room isn't filled with people saying this is a stupid idea is probably an indication that it's not a huge impact to the business.
I haven't heard from me. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Doug, thank you, because I'm going to ask this question. Relative to the International Fuel Tax Agreement fees, we have people in this audience representing the trucking industry. Are you guys okay with this? The heads are, one is nodding. The other is okay. All right. We have both heads nodding.
Thank you.
Senator Dukes, thank you, too.
Now that they're wandering off, if they've got to bring some stuff back for Representative Smith, I just
want
to know.
I don't want my stuff now. I'm good.
Oh, well, I do, so you might want to keep yours on the list.
I'm good.
I actually remember, and I'm going to date myself real well, when that Beautification Act passed and how important it was to Lady Bird Johnson. But I've never seen it having a huge impact probably in the last 20 years in Oregon. I mean, it says we can only have signs every so many miles, feet, whatever the heck it is. And it regulates the size of the signs so that you don't have huge billboards. Well, I guess you do have huge billboards in Portland, but never mind. That bad example. And so that they're not so cluttered. And it actually, the agency had a fair amount of expense initially because you had to get rid of a bunch of signs. It took time and it was through a process, but we had to have fewer signs. But we did this in the 60s?
70s, I believe.
70s, okay. And I'm just trying to figure out today, in a year, what you do. I understand the initial fee, and it seems to me that that should cost some money because you've got some time invested, and Senator Carter's right, you did say you keep a list. But what do we get? I mean, the fees don't sound, except for some of them that jump from 100 to 1500, but I mean, don't sound too bad, but I just want to know what they're getting for it. If I had five billboards between Astoria and Westport on Highway 30, and I had to pay you this money every year, other than the fact that I've got a right to have my signs up there, what do I get from my government?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, I'll give you two answers to that question. One is there's an annual permit that's required, so it's part of that. As you said, it's part of having the legal sign.
Okay, but it could be a dollar. The fact that we require you to do it doesn't mean that you have to increase the fee.
Except that we have to recover our costs to do it. And the other answer is...
So we've got a fee to cover the cost of administering, of issuing a fee because state law requires that you give a permit?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, it's both state and federal law require that process so that you know how many outdoor advertising signs you have. The other answer, it's kind of an unusual way to look at it, but what you're getting, if you have your five legal signs up there, somebody else doesn't have 20 illegal signs up there. And that's the administration of this program is the processing of the permits, the keeping of the list, and the assurance that what is permitted correctly and that what isn't permitted isn't out there competing with the legal signs.
So whenever we come back, you'll show us how many FTE you have for doing this. I'm just curious. I mean, I hate that. Maybe the federal government says we have to have a permit, but we actually have a fee because the state law says we have to have a permit. So, and the state law also says we have to recover our costs, so therefore we have a fee to recover the cost of administering the permit.
We'll get you the number of FTEs, not many, like maybe under two.
Okay, well, I'm sensing that we're not going to move the sections that we have in front of us right now as far as House Bill 5057.
Okay,
you okay with IFTA?
I'm okay.
I'm okay with IFTA.
Okay, well, let's
you, listen. You want to do IFTA? All right, well, I'm just going to ask the committee, are you guys okay with moving them all, or do you want to wait for the information? We're going to have to add to it anyway, but I mean, it would be nice to have some work done. I feel September coming.
Don't be saying that.
I thought this was in January. Why did you just make me?
I know, I'm trusting you.
Don't say that.
No, don't feel any pressure from me.
What time is the filter?
Yeah. No, I haven't left. Don't worry. You see me coming in dusty.
We're little bitty children, so we want him to be home when school starts.
Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you.
Are we starting school next year?
I know, John.
All right, you two are out of control.
Yeah, I know. She got up on her own side of the bed this morning.
No, I bet she was in a great mood.
Yeah. Budget,
okay, sir. Back to business here. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Sure.
Representative Hanson.
I would move these this set of fee increases.
Okay. All the current ones in 5057, yep. With the understanding that there may be others to consider.
The bill's not moving at this time.
Okay. We have that motion. Are there any objections to that? Well, after all this, I don't get an objection.
So moved.
No, no.
Tim, you were late. See, I've been moved a long time ago.
Moving right along. I will close the work session on House Bill 5057. And with that, the gavel will open a work session on House Bill 5056, which is Oregon Department of Transportation's budget bill.
Hugh, you
want to stand at ease?
That's the biggest moan inside I heard of you this morning.
I'm doing my very best, people. All I can do is what I can do. I can't comprehend it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I handed out to you is the LFO recommendation and a letter from the department requesting a supplemental budget on their 2103 expenditure limitation to move money between highway programs to accommodate project payouts, and we will talk about that towards the end of the work session, but I wanted you to have the agency's formal request in front of you. So I'll be working from this draft document, and it's draft because I have to keep making little changes to it, so we'll talk about those later. What you have in front of you is a table showing the historic view of the agency's budget from 99, 2001 to the governor's recommended budget with the LFO recommended budget adjustments. And what you'll see there is that the recommended budget is $28.7 million total funds and 122.4 FTE less than the governor's balanced budget. It includes 12.1 million general funds reductions. And that number is incorrect on the lottery funds. 5.7 million other funds and 0.8 million federal funds. I got them.
Can you go back a little bit, Mr. Chairman? Susan, what did you say about the FTE? I was looking for it on the page.
Oh, front page.
Front page and second paragraph.
Which is such a big number.
No, right up there. It's actually a written statement. Second paragraph.
The governor's recommended budget was 4,686.26 FTE. The LFO recommended budget is 4,563.6 FTE. That's 122.4 less than the governor's recommended budget.
And can you tell us a little bit about that?
I will as we go through it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. There's more detail.
Okay.
Can you turn the page? The second page is the technical adjustments throughout the budget. These are the statewide reductions that all budgets are taking for inflation, employee compensation freeze, attorney general, and the DAS assessment reduction. The total amount that it reduces this budget is $27,866,741. And there is some narrative just below that explaining what is entailed. The inflation technical adjustment eliminates the 3.5% general inflation for items such as in-state travel, out-of-state travel, employee training, office expenses, telecommunications, etc. And then merit increases is self-explanatory. The AG rate adjustment was made when that budget was heard. It reduced the rate from $109 to $98, which reduces budgets statewide. And the Department of Administrative Services budget had reductions that reduced the assessment to state agencies. That's reflected in the technical adjustment. And I would also ask the committee to acknowledge an increase in revenue transfer to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department in the amount of $85,728. This is just a technical adjustment to marry up the two budgets to actual amounts that are being transferred. So at this time, I would ask for a motion to approve the technical adjustments, and we will talk about the specific adjustment in each agency, I mean each program area as we move through the program.
So moved. The motion for technical adjustments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion has been made to approve the technical adjustments as presented by the Legislative Fiscal Office. Is there any further discussion? Senator Duke.
I do have a question, Mr. Chair. I thought that somewhere around the third or the fifth special session, we knocked out all out-of-state travel for agencies.
For agencies funded with general funds.
Okay. Because I remember having some concerns. There are agencies that by their very nature have to go out-of-state in order to do their business. And I wondered if we had put that money back in, but this one never got hit.
A good portion of the travel that they would be doing would be in the collection of wait mile fees and stuff like that. So,
no, well, except to attend the meetings, if it does that, sure. No.
Yeah. Well, no, you still have to enforce wait mile.
In your state.
Greg? This is a discussion I should have never had gone as far as to get you up here. and the question is when you have out-of-state carriers, you need to go and do a, do you still do the audit, or does the IFTA pick up an audit for our wait mile?
Mr. Chairman, IFTA is purely reserved for fuel tax. weight mile tax audits are done by ODOT employees. We travel out of state to audit. We aggregate motor carriers. We make one out-of-state trip, and we attend to all of the weight mile tax audits that are due in that general geographic area. A trip may last up to 6 weeks. The motor carriers, in fact, however, reimburse the state for the cost of that out-of-state travel.
Any further questions on the motion to approve the technical adjustments? Without objection? So moved.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next chart is the vacancy savings in the department. All agencies have been subject to review of their vacant positions. This agency had 417 vacant positions. Of those, 173 were identified as critical to health, welfare, and public safety. Within that 173, 21 are currently filled, 19 are in a recruitment process, 83 are seasonal positions, and 50 are vacant, but probably in some form of recruitment or on their way to being filled. 172 positions are necessary to maintain essential program oversight. 41 are currently filled, 100 are recruitment is in process, 6 are seasonal, and 25 are seasonal student engineering positions. 37 of the positions that are vacant on the vacancy list are attached to policy option packages. In this budget, I'm recommending 133 positions be reduced. That's 91.53 FTE for savings of $8,843,114. Of that amount, we're recommending shifting $2,519,452 to temporaries or professional services for a net savings of $4,170,450. There are 35 positions that were held vacant to fund other priorities, being held for financing packages to reclassify positions into different classifications so that they can do the work that they need to do in other areas of the agency. I'm recommending that 30 positions be reduced for funding reclassification packages. That's 19.91 FTE for a total savings of $1,905,494. And then to reestablish positions at different classifications, there are 19 of 8.49 FTE at $1,423,458 cost. That's a net savings of 11 positions, 11.42 FTE, and $482,036. I will be talking about those vacancies in each of the program areas, so I'm not asking for a motion at this time. I just wanted to share with you a summary of how those vacancies play out department-wide. So,
any questions about vacancies? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susie, could you elaborate a little more on the professional services transfer of $2.5 million? What professional services are those?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is money that would go into each of the program areas that they've identified so that they can backfill where workload requires it. They would have contracts with engineering consulting firms or with architectural consulting firms, environmental firms, whatever kind of specialty they need for that particular work that they're doing, or to hire temporary staff to backfill behind where workflow is fluctuating.
Follow-up?
Would this be the professional services that would be engaged to manage the funding bridge programs?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is no money built into this budget as yet for that bridge package. That is a discussion that we will have later on in the work session.
Representative Carino.
The vacancies, are they other funds
highway funds, federal funds, general fund? What are they? Or are they identified?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, they're primarily other funds. It's probably a mixture, mostly highway funds. There are some federal funds associated with some of the positions. That's a very small part. But as we go through each of the program areas, I'll be able to identify that for you.
Senator Morris.
Susie, I did the division and on the reductions, the FTE of 91.53 came through the total funds saved and come up with just a little excess of $48,000 per year per FTE. That seems to be a low figure. I've tracked these FTEs through all of these budgets for the last several months and have not seen any that have been that low. Some of these.
Go back to the list and look at what all the salaries are for the positions, but these are the salary levels of positions that are being cut.
Some of them is about the benefit pack and whether they're mentioned, whether they appear here anywhere. Or
if you add up all of the costs,
yes.
If it was a base wage, then you have all the costs rolled up on top of that.
And Mr. Chair, some of the positions that are being eliminated are seasonal positions. Some of them are some of the lower level positions, but you know, they're not all manager engineering positions that are being eliminated. The agency has some specific needs in certain areas, and we wanted to make sure that they were allowed to maintain the ability to carry out their programs while we reduce their flexibility in moving positions around through taking vacancies. So
I just pointed that out. Seemed a little low.
Thank you. Any further questions relative to vacancies? We'll move on.
Okay, Mr. Chair, this is, we're moving on now into the program areas, and the first program area is, the first several program areas will be Highway Division. This is the Maintenance Division. The chart in front of you starts with the governor's balanced budget for maintenance at $303,940,591. Other funds, this is highway funds, 1,227.03 FTE. First policy package that the agency requested was for access management. They've asked to add 8 positions to support increases in their demand and work complexity for highway access permitting activities, and would support these increases, these positions, by increases in an administrative fee paid by applicants, which is to be implemented January 2004. I am not recommending these 8 positions at 7.36 FTE. What I am recommending in later program areas is that one position for each region be approved. The agency has asked for a total of 14 positions statewide, but I am recommending that a go-to person in each region be approved. And the next.
You have a question, Senator Dukes?
It's a comment, Mr. Chair. I remember during the budget overview trying to figure out access management and how it was being handled now, and being told that in each region we had somebody who was doing this. Now, they weren't a dedicated person, or at least not in every region, because I didn't know there was one in my region or my area, and was told that, yes, they were doing a number of things, and that was one of the things that they were given to do. And so I guess that makes sense. I haven't noticed it making any changes, but maybe that's because it's working, and so I haven't heard the complaints. But this is actually adding one to each region on top of that? I mean, I know we have an access management problem. I guess I would want to know before we go adding the positions that we're going to get something for this. I'd like to know that they're all trained in dispute resolution or something, so that we get a shot at making this better instead of just putting money into it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bruce Warner had made a presentation to the subcommittee on access management in public hearing, and I think that he could explain better to you what they're doing in access management to resolve their issues. I think that they felt that adding 14 positions is what they needed to accomplish to minimize the conflicts that they have out in the fields, given the criteria that we were given on positions. I'm not recommending all of them, and I don't know that this will solve all of the problems that they have with access management, but maybe Mr. Warner could explain. Mr. Rosenthal. How they will do this.
Yeah. Chair George, members of the committee, John Rosenberger, I'm the highway deputy. The 14 positions we asked for were in two areas. One was to deal with projects. The other was to deal with access management in the regions. It was a service level issue. We have no control over the number of permits that come in. That is, we're sort of demand driven. This was to increase the service level to allow us to respond better to people who came in and had the access questions and to get those permits processed in a timely manner. The other positions were to assist in essentially the modernization programs that we're doing and the safety programs to deal with access issues as related to directly to projects.
Certainly, Senator Dukes.
As it relates to the applications that come in the door, not the projects, do you have something to show us that indicates that the number of people that you have out there doing access management now are that we're getting too many applications for them?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, we can get that information for you. Yes, in terms of its timeliness in responding and our ability to work with applicants, but we will get that information for you.
Representative Smith.
Will these positions be serving under the regional managers?
Chair George, Representative Smith, yes, they would work for the region managers, yes.
John, one reason I'm kind of liking Susie's idea is better than what we have presented to us is that when we personally experience this, my daughter, who works land use issues in the has in the past and still does today, and had to go through this process, so she couldn't believe it. It was just so cumbersome. Phone call to here, phone call to there, and one of her questions was, why doesn't this authority exist in the region where you could get a hold of somebody locally who understood what was happening rather than the repeated people coming out there who didn't seem to know what they were doing? And so explain to me why this wouldn't be a better method.
Chair George, I'm not sure I understand your question. What we are proposing is that these would be in the regions to address the issues that you're talking about.
Right with that. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes.
But aren't there people out in the regions now?
Yes. Yes. So this would enhance the service level that's out there currently.
Might never have found him. But he's out there.
She got
somewhere.
A lot of bodies, though. A lot of bodies, did you find? Representative Smith.
Since we're giving testimonials, I have to tell you, I applaud your department. I don't know what these two are making, but they deserve a lot more. Because I'll tell you what, I've had several access. I don't tell them that in a budget committee. I've had several access issues, and the way we've handled it is we've brought in all the players to the table, and some of these meetings have been pretty darn large. But these folks have been pretty darn good about working through these issues. Have we gotten 100%? No. Will we ever get 100%? No. Do I disagree with about 60%? Yes. But it's not based upon some capricious decision. It's just I don't agree with it. But their process has always been fair. It's always been open. And I'll tell you what, they've worked in my area. They have worked hard. They have worked very hard. And the reason I ask that question is we don't want Tom Shuff leaving us. He's our guy, and he's not allowed to leave Northeast Oregon.
We agree. Thank you.
Well, Senator Dukes.
Now, these people, if we put them out there, will they be able to make the decision? Will they be able to grant the access permit?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, we have people in the field, in the regions, that have the ability to make those decisions, yes. And this would... I can't tell you the specific positions, but these people will have the authority to make those access management decisions.
These new people that we hire that we're going to say are going to be dedicated to access management, if they have a meeting with somebody and they decide it's okay, they'll issue them that piece of paper that is defensible in court that says you have an access?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, I can't tell you yes to that question. There will be a person in the regions that will have that authority to do it, and there that authority exists today.
I'd like to know if we're going to put some people out there specifically to do this, that they have the authority to do it. So you'll find out. Thank you.
Okay. Attorney Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief comment. If we're looking at even at relatively small commercial developments, a service station, a fast food place, it's real easy for projects to run $3 to $5 million. Mm-hmm. And by the time you purchase the land, go through the, if access management permits can be speeded up even by a matter of a few days or a month, they're so critical to the overall development. Increasing the fees to pay for more staff so the process moves faster, more timely and stuff is really chump change in terms of the overall impact on the economy. And I think if the department feels that they need these positions to speed and smooth the process, it's a risk well worth us taking to see that happens.
But on the flip side of that, this morning Senator Messerly and Representative Brown and I were talking about this very issue. And we talk about demands that have been placed on some of our existing businesses as they've asked for minor changes in driveways, which have required very expensive revamping of access. And I think it is a major issue that we figure out a way not to so severely impact our business, because I asked the question of Representative Brown, what was the business loss, 30-40%? Mm-hmm. Now, that's a number I continue to hear as we continue to interfere with what is a reasonable access. In fact, one of the descriptions was a tanker truck having to back into a service station off of a state highway in which it used to be able to pull through before we modified the access. So it's very critical that when we're talking about access management, we don't think, oh, we're going to protect the road. But what are the real impacts, engineering-wise, relative to the safety of a tanker being parked crossways in the middle of a highway, versus the one it used to be able to pull straight in and empty its load and pull back out? So there are a lot of questions I think that need to be addressed, and I'm hoping that we're going to get a commitment here that this is in fact going to have those considerations. I had, for example, in Newburgh, a tire shop that it's a good portion of its business is trucks having tires changed, that the original access was going to be impossible to get a truck in and out of there. And this business has been there forever. They didn't ask for this modification of the highway to be done, but they were facing a certain set of circumstances in which they spent a lot of money trying to defend their right to be in business. And what I'm hoping is that we have consideration. We talked about earlier about what's the impact on business. I think this is the number one impact on business in Oregon relative to transportation, is they're getting their ability to actually have folks and their suppliers have access to their property. So it's not highway access, but maybe access to the business that should be part of the equation.
Chair George, members of the committee, the other positions that we had put in the policy package to work those specific kinds of issues as part of projects that come in the door, that's what they're intended to do, is to work those kinds of issues to make sure that we can accommodate access and still comply with the access management rules.
The other thing, too, can I get assurance from you? We have that case that we talked about before in Newburgh, and it's not actually in my district any longer. But here's a case where access management has eliminated totally the value of that piece of property. This is a piece of property that was going to have, you guys remember me talking about it, a very, very high-class restaurant operation on it. Right now, it is just a piece of property with weeds growing on it. And it's a very, very valuable piece of property. What it's going to require is going to have some effort made to get, for example, joint access to a piece of property. We talked about that in the committee. Some mechanism needs to be studied to do that. And the director and I, we talked about that issue of looking during the interim to some mechanism to address the idea of we purchase maybe the entrance, and then that would be then shared with the two landowners. We've accomplished our access. We've not turned their property from very valuable to zero value. Are we going to be able to look at something like that?
Chair George, we certainly, I will go back and talk with the director, and we will look and see what we can do.
Thank you, Chair George. The one thing that's made our area pretty successful is the regional manager participates in community events as part of chamber, et cetera. And I know this sounds like I'm digressing, but I'm not. I think as part of this access issue, I think it's important for the department to start to enhance its relationship with business. And so as you're developing these positions, I would hope you would encourage them to participate in chamber, et cetera. And because once you have that open communication, a lot of these issues get resolved. It's getting the communication open.
Senator Dukes?
I think the issue that you raised, Mr. Chair, is a good one for the agency to use to come back to us and show us how these new positions
right.
are going to affect thing, difficulties like that. I mean, I think Susie's done a great job here. I am mostly interested in knowing that the workload warrants adding new positions and that these new positions are going to have authority to do what we're asking them to do. But I think that you've just given them the perfect example that they can come back with and show us how this new position is going to help make it possible for that mm-hmm. piece of property to stop growing weeds and be developed.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Actually, I would be interested also maybe a profile from you on what you did and you were able to come to some conclusion using that as an example to the committee. I know I would be interested in something like that. Mm-hmm.
Sir George, Senator Carter, we'll do that.
I think I'm where I'm from.
Sir George, you're closer. Oh, okay. Susie, let's get back to you.
Okay.
Item
number two is the compensation freeze for this program area. That's $1,707,663. Item number three is the vacant position adjustment. It eliminates 41 positions. 28.35 FTE at a savings of $2,704,586. I just did a quick look up on the positions here, and the positions in this category range from a low of $12,000 per year, those would be seasonal positions, to $52,000 per year for... I'm still on page four.
Page four. Okay.
Maintenance. But, and then item number three of maintenance.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from the department what's the impact of eliminating the 41.
Chair George, Representative Hansen, again for the record, Doug Tindall, State Maintenance Engineer. The impact of this reduction in maintenance is will actually start to be seen by the traveling public. We've pared down maintenance positions to the point that we can't just sort of generally absorb this level of cut any longer. Specifically, we know it will essentially require us to contract out work that is currently being done by ODOT employees. Specifically, one thing that we will have to do is contract out snow removal in ski area parking lots. We know that for sure that we'll have to do that. And I just recently wrote a letter to the ski areas telling them that was an impact of this cut. They will be reimbursed from the snow, if they're in the snow park program, they will be reimbursed from the snow park fund for doing the snow removal up to the amount that's in the snow park fund. But currently, that is performed in many ski areas by ODOT staff, and that will be one of the reductions that we make. The other reductions will occur in closure of some maintenance stations, and we need a little more time to figure out exactly which ones will close, but they will probably follow the commission guidance where the commission has expressed to ODOT to focus on high volume freight routes, national highways of significance, and so we'll probably choose to close stations that serve roadways that are not in those categories. Likely those will be some rural maintenance stations. We will try to contract for the work that we do
in those areas, and how successful we'll be with that, it's not clear to me right now.
Senator Carter, was that you?
Yes.
Oh, Senator Carter.
Do most of the ski areas have capacity, machinery-wise, by which they can expect to keep the snow removed so that it will not affect their bottom line in terms of recreation?
Senator George, Senator Carter, in the areas where we perform, where ODOT performs the snow removal now, they do not generally have that type of equipment. However, one of the reasons that we looked at that as a place that we would move to outsource or not have ODOT employees do that is because there are ski areas that do their own snow removal today. There are four, to my knowledge, that do all or most of their own snow removal. Two of those are inside the snow park program and their costs are reimbursed, and two of those are outside. You don't have to have a snow park permit to go to their area, and they do it as a cost of doing business. But the others today do not have the equipment, and that's why I sent a letter to them to let them know that they may have to acquire the equipment to do that snow removal.
Senator Dukes?
How long will it take you to determine just where you're going to eliminate and whether that can be picked up by local? I have a question for Susie, too. Am I looking right on page, let me put the holes to the page, 6 of 85, that there's 73.38 maintenance positions that we're losing here?
Oh, you're looking at the 070 package. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the agency is, in package 070, eliminating 88 positions, 73.38 FTE, as a part of their internal rebalance to accommodate highway projects. That was a decision that was made by the agency before it came to the legislature.
And that's on top of then what we've been talking about?
Yes, it is.
And what we've been talking about is how many?
An additional 28.35.
Whoa. I'm sorry. That's an awful lot of... That's over 100, or about 100 FTE out of maintenance. We have to talk about this one. Speaking as for somebody who lives in a rural area, although not as rural as Representative Smith over there, I'd hang on to my maintenance stations if I were you, or watch them carefully. I'm just curious, how long will it take, Greg, for you guys to come up with how you're going to make this work so that we can see how it's supposed to work before we vote on it?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, I could give you an estimate. I don't know that after you took action on this package, obviously we would move before the start of the next biennium to start redeploying resources, because we'd have to do it quickly. I can give you a couple of an idea of what that might be. There's a maintenance station in a town called Adele, east of Lakeview, that maintains a highway that is not a high volume. It's not a designated freight route. There's a maintenance station in a town called Richland that is northeast of Baker City that similarly is on a low volume or lower volume road. It's not a freight route. It's not a highways of national significance. Chair George, Representative Smith, I understand that, and the maintenance station in Adele is very important to the folks who live in Plush. But I get, you know, the question was, what's the impact of this? And what I'm trying to portray here is the impact is real. It's not one that we can just hide. We can't absorb this level of cuts any longer without any apparent impacts to Oregonians. And so we're faced with some of those, having to make those hard choices. And I know that you all have had to make those hard choices in a number of areas. Chair George, I haven't seen that page that Susie's looking at, so I have to. What are those, Susie? Are they?
That's the package 070 that the agency recommended be reduced from the from maintenance department's budget.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, I'm going to suspect that what this is positions that we have reduced so that we can maximize the amount of material that we put out in road. We try. This is part of the paring down to get down to the minimum size and maintenance. It's also partially some maintenance positions have been moved over to project delivery to accommodate increases in project delivery. A change that you see in this package is essentially made or being made as we have worked through the biennium, and this particular change would not change the nature of the maintenance stations that we have. This is an internal rebalancing of priorities, but it's as far as we could go without having to make some of those more major changes.
I'd like to see the details of the internal rebalance before we do that particular package. I mean, I'd actually, when you decide where you're going to reduce, which maintenance stations have gone away, I'd honestly like to know what the unemployment rate is in each one of those counties. We're supposed to be about economic development, and I don't think we do it by starting to increase the unemployment rates and do less maintenance.
I mean, Senator Dukes, the positions that I recommended are vacant positions. There's no unemployment attached to them. The positions that are in 070, the agency has just explained, were positions that have been recast in other areas of the department. They're not they're not people who are going away. They're going to other areas of the department.
Now they're talking about closing maintenance stations.
Because of 28,
Do those Chair George,
just refer to a different maintenance station?
Yeah, that's correct. What Susie said is, I didn't portray this well probably, the positions that are identified here are actually vacant positions. They are were picked simply because they were vacant. When I talk about closing maintenance stations, we would redeploy people that have it. There's not a layoff here. We would redeploy people that are working into other areas. Because by taking vacant positions, you have some sort of anomalies where you just happen to have some vacancies on one crew that, for instance, would leave us without a bridge maintenance crew in La Grande if we just took the vacant positions. And so what we would do is reshuffle our workforce, which would and take some of those stations that we would probably close down and move those people into the areas that are of higher priority.
So the 28.35 FTE is vacant, our vacant positions?
That's correct.
And you'll get me the specifics on the ADA?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's
Representing Hanson and back to Senator Carter.
Two questions on the vacancies. If the 41 positions, if they've been vacant for a long time and the agency didn't feel that they were terribly needed and didn't fill them, that's one issue. If they were kind of the natural vacancies that occur all the time in an agency of this size and then we're not filling them at this point, I can see that could be very disruptive. The other thing that concerns me is when we talk about closing maintenance stations, and certainly there's savings there, but still that means when needed maintenance has to be done in that particular area, this is a big state. If you've got increased costs because now you're doing maintenance from a base that's farther away, and you've got travel longer distances, you're inherently building in some inefficiencies, and I think I need to get more information on both of those issues. What's your overall vacancy rate? Maybe what's the historical vacancy rate going back for a couple of years? And then how do these positions fit into that?
I'll let Mike answer the first question. I think he's got those statistics.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, just to give an idea, our average vacancy rate on an annual basis is 9-10%. In the current year, we're at 9.1% at this point. Last year, we were a little bit higher than that. We expect by the end of this fiscal year, at the end of the month, with all the changes regarding PERS, et cetera, folks are indicating they will probably retire by June 30th. So it may be approaching 9.9% or 10%. 5% by the end of the month for this year, which is a little higher than an average year. In terms of the specific ones that are selected here, this is on the basis of what is vacant right now. We've had an opportunity to work with Susie a little bit on adjusting which ones were selected to try to target some that have less impact, but it would take us longer to make sure we go through the decisions that Doug has outlined in terms of maintenance stations and other pieces about exactly where the positions would go. So if the reductions end up at this level, we'd ask for the opportunity to come back to an emergency board and get those rebalanced to make sure that it is in sync with a policy decision about what would happen with regarding the impacts.
Susie, let's go ahead and work the full list, and then maybe so I think we're going to get answers to some of the questions.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that I think it's so important, back to the point that Senator Deutz made, that our economist, when he was forecasting at the beginning of the session, talked about how the government play a major role in furthering the downturn in the economy with so many layoffs, even though I'm clear that these are not people in positions that you're laying off. But it's something that we certainly would want to keep in mind if we get to a point, which I suspect we are, that has been in the air for some time now, that we're going to be actually laying off bodies. And if that happens, we need to take in consideration how we are playing a role into the downturn in the economy as well. And if indeed we are as serious as we said we have in terms of economic development, that need to be a consideration that we have in looking at departments where hopefully we are building our economic rebuild into this area. And so I just don't see us counting on these people to help us to rebuild Oregon's economy, but at the same time taking away positions that would be able to help them build this economy. That is incongruent and very conflicting to even say that. And so if we're expecting an upturn in the economy and we're going to do it through the Department of Transportation, I think we need to be very careful in terms of the kind of layoffs. Because that, to me, this urban woman, athlete with bad knees now who does not ski, would ask the question, why in the world would we want to make businesses that are seasonal in the first place go and buy the kind of capacity? How much one of those machines would cost to remove snow?
Chair George, Senator Carter, ranges from a simple snowplow, which is probably the size that we buy, $40,000 or $50,000, to a snowblower, which would probably be $250,000 or $300,000.
So for 3, maybe 4 months, they have to have that kind of money out of their bottom line. Duh, it does not make sense to me.
Senator Carter, I think by the time we get through the whole process here, you're going to understand why these FTE are critical. Because what they're going to do is, because of decisions are being made right here, we're going to have a major infusion of additional dollars to improve this whole system. So if you'll bear with us, I think this thing will make sense towards the end, and I'd be happy to share some of the conversations that I've been party to relative to the packages that are coming.
I will bear with you, and I will be patient, but take in consideration what I said today, because it will be a recurring theme in this committee as far as market targets are concerned.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Item number 4 is the inflation adjustment. That's $4,745,595 in this budget. Item number 5 is the Attorney General rate reduction of $55,526. Item number 6 is the DAS assessment reduction, $648,765. And item number 6 is a other technical adjustments. These are position adjustments. The agency has requested that of the vacant positions that they have, that 9 additional positions be abolished, that 6.91 FTE, to establish 2 FTE and reclassify 8 other positions for a net position reduction of $575,071. There is also a very technical adjustment of 9.36 FTE to reconcile the position information system to the budget information system. There are two different systems. One system calculates position information at its level, and the budget information system is dependent on the data that we put in and the date certain. And when the two come together, they need to marry up. And this is a line that allows them to become equal. But aside from those 9.36 FTE, the adjustment above is accommodating the agency's request to do a financing package to adjust positions within the agency. When the legislature is not in session, normally these positions are done administratively. This kind of work is done administratively through the Department of Administrative Services. And because we are in session and we can take care of it during the budget process, we are doing that now. Mr. Chair, I'm going to skip over this budget note. It hasn't been approved yet by the co-chairs, and move on then to preservation. And we will come back to maintenance for motions. Preservation, the governor's balanced budget is at $313,098,216.241.17 FTE. Policy package 100 implements the Transportation Investment Act for preservation projects from the bond proceeds approved by the 2001 legislature. I'm recommending approval. $16,239,324 will be paid out during the biennium on these kinds of projects. Item number two is Policy Package 101, Access Management. This is one of the five positions that I'm recommending for access management at a cost of $123,296 for the biennium and 0.92 FTE. The agency proposed to shift service and supply money to personal services to fund the position, and I'm recommending approval of that package. Item number three is Policy Package 490. This is the Sylvan Maintenance Station. In this budget, they're reducing their other fund services and supplies to support the interfund transfer to capital construction for a new facility at the Sylvan Maintenance Station at $2,500,000. I'm recommending approval of the transfer.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Is this the one where the locals didn't like the looks of our building?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just checking.
Item number four is...
Excuse me. You know, we were just talking about eliminating maintenance stations all over the place, and here we're authorizing $2.5 million. This number exceeds the number that we were deficit on the other one.
Just
do we have an explanation of that?
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to the department's priorities.
That's what I was thinking when that was going on.
Chair George, members of the committee, this fulfills a commitment that we made to the local governments in, I believe it's Multnomah County, as part of the Sylvan Interchange Project required the relocation and rearrangement of the existing maintenance facility. There were certain things that were placed on us. We made some commitments to remodel and to landscape the site and do a number of things. We were only partially completed. This would fulfill that, the remainder of the commitment that was made.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that would beg the question, is it possible to defer that for into the next biennium?
Chair George, Senator Morris, we have deferred this for a while. We certainly could defer it again if that was the direction, but we do have a commitment. The Sylvan project has been going on. That whole section was all part of the West Side Light Rail project, so it's been going on for about 10 years. So the commitment was made a number of years ago.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. As part of this overall discussion, back on that issue in Richland, we mentioned it earlier in the impact it would have to the community of Halfway. For those of you who know where Halfway is, it's at the end of a long road, one way in, one way out. What's the plan to assist those folks in January and February?
Chair, Representative Smith, what we would do is two things. We would although the money that's being saved by eliminating the positions is not put back into the budget, we'll look to see if we've got money to develop some sort of contract to contract for maintenance if that's possible in that area. The other thing that will happen is it's not like we'll never go up that Stolar Road. It's not like we'll never go up there again. It just won't get the same level of service that it's had in the past.
Just a follow-up. I would truly encourage you to have this conversation with Representative Butler and Senator Farioli, just to give them a heads up.
Well, as we move, I talked about a couple. There's a couple of other maintenance stations that we look at, and when we do this, we will do it in as much of an open process as we can make. But at some point, you've got to pick priorities.
Okay. Item number four is the compensation freeze, $366,720 for this program area. Item number five is the vacant position adjustment. This area eliminates four positions and four FTE for $343,910 savings. Item number six is the inflation adjustment, $1,043,464. Item number seven is the Attorney General rate adjustment, $1,028. There's no adjustment for the DAS assessment in this program. And item number six is position adjustments to abolish one position, reclassify Program Tech 2 to an Engineering Specialist 2 for a net reduction of 0.5 FTE and savings of $76,756. It also reduces three positions and expenditure limitation to reconcile the position information system to the budget system. And if you're ready to take a motion on that.
Well, not quite, but maybe.
Okay.
On the four vacancies, I've got two questions. One, if the department could explain what they're losing with those four vacancies. The other question would be if the four vacancies have been coordinated into LFO recommendation six, are these occurring simultaneously? Would there be different technical adjustments or have the technical adjustments that are necessary, have the four vacancies been factored into that?
Before Mr. Tyndall speaks on the 3.25 FTE, these are position adjustments that the agency has requested to reconcile the position information system to the budget system. There's only a 0.5 FTE in their request there. That is also to accommodate the department's request for reclassifications within the area. So when we discuss this, you want to talk about the vacant position. That's where the impact is going to be in total. But they do go together.
And Chair George, Representative Hansen, in terms of impact, you're going to see in each one of these programs vacant positions that are eliminated. I'm not sure we actually ever got to answering your question about how long have these been vacant. Very few of these are long-term vacancies. Most of these are relatively recent. It's just part of the turnover. In fact, it's difficult the actual position numbers almost changes day to day as people get hired and people change jobs and so forth. The impact of all of these reductions, in addition to maintenance, is that the department is then required to do the same amount of work with less staff, which will, as similar to maintenance, require more contracting out. In general is probably the solution that we'll have to look for. But the staff is being reduced and the workload is not. And so there are, it's just a change in how the work gets accomplished.
Senator Morris.
Maybe this is the appropriate time to raise this issue because it plays out in a number of these items where there are contracts left for projects, services provided, and I share maybe a little bit different background than the rest of you, having had my life in contracting highway construction. that when a contract's let, if there isn't adequate project management on the part of the owner, you put the owner becomes at risk for claims against, in this case, against the state. And my question, I think, would be to Bruce, is he here? Or maybe John could answer this question. To what degree do they perceive risk in pulling FTEs away from project administration to the extent that that is the case? And what kind of risk does it have in being responsive to a contract for a building project, and when you're not responsive, and things get held up, the contractor can't move, and claims are made? These are issues I think we need to put on the table and evaluate before we jump off this cliff in pulling resources away from specifically project management administration.
Chair George, Senator Morris, there are some risks associated with. We certainly will have to go back and look at the projects that we would let and how we would handle the quality assurance and the project management issues, look at what opportunities are out there to contract for that type of work. Again, even contracting for the work, we're still going to have to manage those contractors. So there will be an impact. I believe there would probably be delays in contracting rather than let a contract and not have the appropriate assurance and project management staff to associate with it. So it may mean we have to adjust our schedule, but I share the concern as we are cutting into it. We have received criticism in the past from AGC that the project management is an area that we need to work on within the agency, and this certainly would exacerbate that problem, at least in the short term.
John, before you get away, last night at Dundee, had a chance, we probably had 10 or 12 ODOT personnel there, and I had a chance to talk to some of them. And what they were saying is there is right now, and if there's a change occurring because of the fact that we have laid so many projects out in front of you. What one of the engineers expressed to me is they were eagerly anticipating the fact of being able to bring in professionals from outside in order to satisfy some of these things that we're talking about here, in order to expedite these projects at a higher level than we've ever been asked to do them before. So it seems we're in a change anyway. The change is underway, according to what he said to me.
Chair George, members of the committee, certainly there is a change underway. We certainly, with the OTIA and the funding, we have changed the way we've done business, where we use substantially more contractors, but that does take some management of the contractors, and it also requires staff just to get those contracts out. So we certainly are changing the way ODOT has done business, and we will continue to do that. But at the same time, there's only a certain amount of projects that we can get out the door and assure that the contracts are right, that we have the right staff or contractors for oversight. And reducing the staff will certainly have an impact, at least in the short term.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have to say that when we're talking about these vacant positions, we're talking about an agency that operates at 90 to 94% at capacity, and we are asking, or we will be eliminating positions that are vacant, that they would probably be operating at one time or another without these positions anyway. What it's doing is reducing their flexibility within the agency to move positions more frequently than what they've been able to do. And the impacts that they're talking about here today are things that I don't think that they would follow through on, because they have the capacity still within their budget to make changes in the organization. Yes, so let's move on.
Hey, Mr. Chair, if John could stay a second, I have a question for him. Where are we on the STIP process? Are we current with all of the projects to where we expected to be when we put out the current STIP?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, All of those projects are still moving forward. I believe that there are projects that have slipped, primarily due to the infusion of OTIA. When the when those were added, clearly some of the STIP projects did slip from where they were originally anticipated. I can't tell you exactly, but I can get that information for you.
I'd like to know the percentage and the dollar amount and probably where they're located around. I mean, are they sort of equally around the state or all from region? And then OTIA isn't moving quite as quickly as we had anticipated when we passed that one either, is it?
Actually, Chair George, Senator Dukes, I believe from what was originally anticipated, we actually are ahead of schedule. We're actually getting those out faster. That's been part of the direction from the director, is to try and accelerate as much as we can all of those projects.
I'm trying to get a feel for it. We have STIP, we have OTIA, and now we're talking about another big construction package, and we're reducing personnel. I know there are some people somewhere in this budget that are being added back to help get the projects out the door, but I'm just trying to get a feel for how this is all going to mesh together, and are we actually going to be able to continue getting the existing stuff out the door, including STIP, because the locals participate so heavily in STIP in forming it, and they expect those projects. So,
Senator George, and Senator Chair George, Senator Dukes, clearly OTIA had an impact, and it impacted the STIP in terms of delays. We reshuffled within the organization. We did not add new staff for OTIA. We are asking for additional positions as part of the bridge package, but between OTIA and the bridge package and the normal STIP, we are looking at doubling the construction program, which is about $250 million a year in payments and another about $100 million a year in right-of-way and PE. We're looking at doubling that for about the next 10 years. So it's a significant impact, and with reducing the number of FTE within the organization to deliver it, we've got to find a new way to do business, and we are doing that. This doesn't help.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to want to know what that method is for delivering all
and
of that.
And we have to remember, we're talking about vacancies here and not FTA positions. With that, I'm going to close the public work session on House Bill 5056, and with the top of the gavel, we'll also be adjourned. Okay.